Hello and welcome to this week's Mooney and Politics podcast, which has been recorded on May the 26th at around 4 o'clock. Apologies if you hear some noise in the background. I'm having some work done, by the way, on the building, not on me, though I probably need this more so than the building. But there's some work going on and I had completely forgotten that it was due to happen today. And this is the only time I got it this week to get a chance to sit down and record it. So if you hear some hammering and sawing and whatever else and drilling gets out in the background, try not to interrupt your listening pleasure, for the want of a better phrase. Anyway, so this week's column looks at the issue of housing. It's an issue, frankly, I've touched on many, many times before, that I don't think this government is tackling the housing problem on the scale necessary. Now, I think they are tackling it in a way that the previous government didn't, and I believe that the Housing for All strategy is essentially a decent strategy. But as I've made the point before, I think far too much of it's backloaded. And I think that's going to cause political problems in 2 or 3 years' time. But let's press on ahead with what I had written for Broadsheet last Monday. Because I think it was just a little over a week ago, or a week before last Monday, that Éireann Road Éireann announced that it was no longer able to provide catering services on its intercity network. So, with the exception of some Dublin to Belfast Enterprise trains, passengers will no longer be able to buy a cup of tea or coffee accompanied by a stale Kit Kat or a half-filled sandwich left over from somebody's 21st birthday party. Yes, we will miss the fun of seeing what items the catering services manage not to pack on the toes wobbly aluminum trolleys which dispensed hot water with all the force of a 56-year-old with a swollen prostate. But frankly, as problems facing this country go, this isn't a major one. The problem, of course, has nothing to do with the complexities of providing a cup of tea on a train, because according to the catering contractor Rail Gourmet, it has all to do with the real difficulties it is having in finding people to actually man the trolleys and to push them up and down the train. Rail Gourmet says the problem is now so acute that it cannot resolve it, and thus Irish Rail must now organise a tender competition so it can hopefully restore this fairly essential but basic service sometime in 2023. Now, just to go off track for a second, it does occur to me that it might be more efficient to franchise the catering service route by route rather than offering it as one single contract across the whole network. Though network does seem a slightly glorified term to describe our national rail infrastructure or framework. And what you do, therefore, you'd let local caterers tender individually for the nearest route and either buy or rent those trolleys, which I assume either Éireann Road Éireann or Rail Gourmet own and would be happy to see sold or lease them. And for some reason I have a memory in my mind there of from the dim and distant past. I think it was either Éireann Road Éireann or maybe its older predecessors in CIE or whatever, winning an award for the design of these trolleys, because I think they could carry more water than any of the models been used in European networks or wherever. These trolleys apparently are a fairly valuable asset. Anyway, enough disappearing off down this siding, let's return to the main direction of travel. Because not being able to buy a coffee while sitting on the Rosslare train is a nuisance. But the bigger problem, the shortage of labour to fill reasonably well-paying, low-skilled jobs because people cannot afford to live in Dublin or almost anywhere else in Ireland is a big problem. And it's not a problem that's unique to Rail Gourmet or even to the hospitality sector. And it's a problem I've actually discussed here before, particularly in terms of the soaring costs of living in the capital, particularly the outrageous cost of accommodation. And I know, however, from feedback, this is no longer a Dublin-only problem. Because you don't need a degree in economics to realise that a housing model where it costs almost 2,000 to rent an apartment in Dublin, but only 1,200 euros per month to buy that same apartment, is a broken one. Of course, the problem is the difficulty of trying to find somewhere that you can buy and then finding the deposit, particularly if you're already paying rent in an existing apartment. And this is why we have this dreadful catch-22 situation. Now, I fail to understand about this. Is that for most of my early life, and I'm talking about my 20s and 30s, and we're talking the guts of 25, 30 years ago, it was much cheaper to rent than to buy. And therefore, right throughout my 20s and 30s and into my early 40s, I was perfectly happy to rent and to live in areas where I could probably not afford to buy an apartment or a house. And for that reason, I lived in the heart of Donnybrook for almost 2 decades in a small but very comfortable modern one-bedroom apartment where the rent rarely increased. I took responsibility for the upkeep and repairs. I met the owner who lived down the country face to face maybe once every 2 or 3 years when they came up to have a look at the apartment, and only heard from them probably by letter or phone once or twice a year. I was a good tenant. They were a good landlord. And when I eventually came to move out and to move on to somewhere else, they actually gave me a small gift, a parting gift. And these weren't friends of the family or anyone I knew. The only reason I knew them was that this person was my landlord. Now, I accept that my situation was unique because I moved into the apartment just before the property boom. So while the initial rent was a little high at the time, it was a couple of quid above what I'd already been paying for a two-bedroom duplex down in Ringsend. But as the property market started to lift off, what I was paying in Donnybrook started to look not just reasonable, but actually quite low. So while rents all around me were starting to soar, mine stayed relatively fixed to the owner's monthly mortgage repayments. Now, given that we have such a dysfunctional rental property market and a barely functioning home purchase market, you would imagine that government policy will be focused on fixing these things as speedily as possible, especially as we have come through nearly 8 years of squandered opportunities. You'd think so, but I see very little sign of that either at speed or at scale. Because without doubt, there is increasing evidence of new sites and activity with more cranes in the skyline and more JCBs going backwards and forwards. If you drive from the south side of Dublin to the north side of Dublin, you're going to pass several fairly decent sized building sites where new apartment blocks, mainly apartment blocks, are going up. But the problem is it's still not on the scale necessary. And by the way, this isn't just some random analysis that popped into my prejudiced little head. It's the view of the IMF, who in their May the 5th Article 4 mission statement on Ireland said, and I quote, "Housing supply policies should be further strengthened with a focus on boosting productivity in the construction sector and improving zoning and the permits processes." The IMF then added, "While the, in inverted commas, first home, affordable purchase shared equity scheme, which is part of Housing for All, aims to support first-time buyers, it," and this is to be stressed from the IMF, "it does not address the key issue, which is the supply bottlenecks." End of quote. So we need a major ramping up now, not only because it's the right thing to do, but also because it's the right thing to do politically. If housing is still the number one issue at the time of the next general election, then this government and many of the TDs backing it, particularly the Fianna Fáil and Green ones, are toast. And this is a point I'll return to later and explain why specifically them. Now, last September, I wrote a piece about the government's Housing for All strategy where I welcomed the plan but warned that, this is the quote, "my big fear is that the target of addressing the crisis over 9 to 10 years combined with a housing output delivery timeline that backloads a delivery does not convey the sense of Fianna Fáil fully grasping the scale of the problem." End of quote. Now, almost every day on social media and occasionally in the traditional media, we'll hear from some of Micheál Martin's most favoured Fianna Fáil public representatives telling us about the latest increase in the numbering of housing starts and of housing start applications. And all of these numbers are real. All of them are very, very welcome. But the optimism with which the public representatives deliver this news does not seem to allow for the chronic shortage of bricklayers, plasterers, carpenters and electricians and a whole range of skilled people across the sector. I recently bumped into a colleague of mine who'd attended a council briefing on housing, and he said that actually the whole thing sounded quite optimistic until you realised that the chart in front of you said that the bulk of the units which were coming on stream would not be available until after 2025 or 2026. I'm hearing the same thing from people in the business. They lament the house building time lost to lockdowns and the flight of skilled building labour. The shortage of skilled building labour is now more acute than it was 2 years ago. But just think again, a lot of this stock is not coming available until 2025, 2026, 2027. And you know what those dates are? They're 1, 2, and 3 years after the next general election. Because coming from a political background, I tend to look at things from a political perspective. And I wonder, will seeing more building sites opening up be enough to convince the public that the crisis has truly passed? Because I don't think it will. As a very savvy Fianna Fáil backbencher said to me pre the 2020 general election, the only answer to a housing crisis is a set of keys. A site map or a fancy PowerPoint is no replacement for that exquisite sound of the turn of a key in your own front door. Sadly, the Taoiseach and his supporters seem not to realise that there will be no electoral gratitude at the next general election for TDs or ministers who tell voters, look, we solved the problems and you're only going to have to wait a couple of more years to feel it. Because that's not the way politics works. If housing is still one of the top issues at the time of the next general election, then this government will not be returned for a second term. But that is not the same thing as saying that Sinn Féin is going to coast in, though I'm starting to accept that that's a more likely scenario than seeing this political combination back in office. And the prospect is not helped when the government seems incapable to champion those things that it's actually doing right. Now, some weeks ago, Sinn Féin produced press releases that they sent around various provincial newspapers, asserting that the government's affordable housing targets for that particular county were, quote, pathetic. And in the written column version of this, I have an article from the Limerick Post, where one of the local senators down there makes this point and says, oh, there's only going to be 54 new affordable houses produced every year for the next 5 years, as in from now till 2026. And in the case of this Limerick press release in particular, the way the article was structured and the way the press release is structured, it made it appear that these underwhelming targets had only been revealed to Sinn Féin after a Herculean effort by that party had forced a reluctant minister to reveal the numbers that he was so desperately trying to add. Because the reality is a lot less dramatic. The figures in case came from a very turgid reply to a one-line parliamentary question from Owen O'Brien, which asked for, and I quote, a breakdown by local authority of the affordable housing targets funded by the Affordable Housing Fund from 2022 to 2026. Now, in his reply, Minister Dara O'Brien said, and I quote, from 2022 to 2026, over 28,000 affordable houses are targeted for delivery, end of quote. That was quite a lengthy answer. But he then proceeded to include a county-by-county table that only listed delivery targets from local authority lands or advance purchase between 2022 to 2026. Now, the significance of that is that the number of units in that table in total is 7,550. That's only 27% of the overall target, which, as I said earlier, was 28,000 between 2022 and 2026. So, which number does Sinn Féin use to denounce this plan and denounce the government targets? Well, unsurprisingly, it uses the one in the table, which that was a 7,551, because that's the one that's done on a county-county basis, although it knows that this number only accounts for only 27% of the actual target. So they take the county-county by breakdown from 2022 to 2026, and in each case, they divide it by 5, which is the number of years from 2022 to 2026, and they work out that in Limerick there'll be 254 houses, and that's 60-something, and that's 54 per year for each of the year next 5 years. But that's only 27% of the actual target. I don't think it's unfair to call this exercise mendacious. But if we're going to do that, let's bear some opprobrium too for a government that is so politically inept as to hand its opponents a table of figures that is bereft of any political explanation or context. Because if you don't have a table of the county-by-county affordable housing targets, well then say you don't have that. Don't offer your opponents the next nearest thing, which is only represents a quarter of the answer, and then not expect them to use that and to beat you to death with it. I didn't support the formation of the government. I still don't. I oppose the programme for government. But that does not mean I'm opposed to Fianna Fáil's participation in government per se. I happen to think that ignoring the verdict the people passed on the last Fine Gael government at the last election, and then going on to prolonging the government life of that Fine Gael party, a party that squandered the recovery, is seriously bad politics. Now, whatever hopes there are of persuading people that this is a Fianna Fáil-led government with Micheál Martin at the helm, and by the way, there are no signs that his appointment as Taoiseach has done anything to reverse his party's declining support levels, and that's probably going to be the topic of a future article, certainly before the summer, which I look back at the polling numbers for the last 2 years. There are absolutely no chances of that happening after December the 16th next, when either Leo Varadkar or his successor as Fine Gael leader takes over. Because after that, this will become a Fine Gael-led government. It'll become a Fine Gael government that talks big and acts small. It'll become a Fine Gael government where spin trumps reality, and where the second biggest party in government daily eats the middle of the day lunch of the biggest party, as it competes with them for the support of farmers and homeowners who no longer have mortgages. That's why Fianna Fáil TDs and Green TDs will pay the price for whatever this government fails to do. It makes for very grim reading. So that's the column as I left it on Monday. And I'm sad to say that nothing I've seen since then has suggested to me that I've been excessively pessimistic or excessively critical. If anything, I'm probably underplaying it and understating it. But however, that's this week's Moody and Politics podcast. I think we heard a bit of drilling noise there in the last 10-15 minutes. Sorry about that. but I mean, the work must go on, and I will be talking to you again next Monday. Oh, sorry, I'll have a piece next Monday, and then I'll be talking to my podcast probably the following Wednesday or Thursday. I'll take a break then for a week for the June bank holiday. I'll be back the week after that. At some point towards the middle of June, I should have my summer political reading list. And then after that, I'll probably do, as I said, that piece, looking back on the polling numbers and having a look at the relative positions of the parties, and maybe starting to, again, to return to the point why Fianna Fáil is remaining remarkably static on somewhere 16, 17, 18% while its leader soars ahead. Now, I looked at this again, I think about a year ago, about why Fianna Fáil has such a popular leader and why it's remained such an unpopular party. And I think that's a problem that Fianna Fáil is going to maintain for a few more months. But after December and after the turnarounds, the problem won't become Fianna Fáil being unpopular and its leader becoming very popular. The problem for Fianna Fáil will be its leader becoming not quite as unpopular as the party, but heading in that direction when it becomes tarnished. Anyway, that's for another day. That's for another time. I hope you have a very, very good weekend, and I'll talk to you next week. So, until then, bye-bye.